Most people know the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That might be called a first principle, a guide to living a life of doing no harm. That sounds pretty nice, doesn't it? My guest today is talking about living a life with first principles to preserve liberty and prosperity. We also discuss if there are people who have first principles to do harm or to lie. It seems like a crazy idea, but maybe that at least can explain some of what we see happening in the world today. The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 166.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food is on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here, the Culinary Libertarian. Welcome back to the podcast. Happy to have you here. Happy to be here. Get your Thanksgiving in order with prep lists and recipes from my Thanksgiving page, culinarylibertarian.com/holidayprep. That's all one word. You'll find the recipes I use for sweet and savory dishes and the sanity-saving and editable prep list. Click over to culinarylibertarian.com/holidayprep. My guest today is former Texas Congressman and the driving force behind the revolution, Dr. Ron Paul. Dr. Paul currently hosts the Ron Paul Liberty Report, has published many books about liberty, and still travels to speak about liberty and prosperity, sound money, and non-interventionism. I've invited Dr. Paul on to talk about first principles. What are those? Can anyone have them? And are they always for good? Hello, Dr. Paul. Thank you for joining me today on the Culinary Libertarian Podcast.
Very good. Nice to be with you.
I invited you on. I want to talk about first principles. I was listening to the Liberty Report a week or two ago, and you commented to Daniel that it was almost as if some of the politicians had a first principle of lying. I thought, well, now that's an interesting idea, because when I think of first principles, I think of positive things. Well, I guess things not to hurt, don't hurt people, don't take the stuff, and any libertarian knows that, but and even the golden rule, don't do harm. So I wanted to talk to you about what is a first principle. What does that mean when we talk about a first principle?
The way I use that and talk about lying is that one of the first principles of Marxism is that they cannot know truth. They don't believe in truth. And therefore, anything they say becomes the truth. And this means that theoretically impossible to know the truth. So anything they say can be used. And this is very, very dangerous, because what we should be doing is seeking truth. So if you want to talk about this in a positive way, is the whole purpose is to seek out and permit truth to exist and allow people to discuss it, recognizing that none of us are perfect and we have to just do our best. But the goals are quite different. People who are nihilistic, they have no higher view. There's no higher law other than themselves. Yes, what they can control locally or something like that, there may be a little bit, but they don't have any belief in a higher authority, and they become a total devout atheist. And I think they have to turn into miserable people, you know, because they're the ones who, I would say, you know, people like Karl Marx and Hitler, these are the extreme of nihilists. And, this whole thing of having a goal of seeking truth and rejecting, this nihilism, it reminds me of my discovery one time about when there was a criminal act being carried out. Some hoodlums were in a store and they were robbing, and it was not a major robbery, but on the way out, the person that did the robbery got very little, and there was somebody hiding behind the counter, couching down there, trying to avoid it, and the hoodlum just goes over and shoots and kills them. So that means there's no conscience, no guilt whatsoever. There's no higher authority, and there's a lot of people like that. And there's a relative degrees on this. Some people are totally nihilistic, and they don't believe in anything at all other than themselves. But then there's some who, you know, are pretty nihilistic, and they don't have much much conviction. And I think that's what's necessary. I think that seeking truth is our goal here at the Liberty Report. And that requires a libertarian approach to discussion, open discussion, and seeking truth. And the only vehicle that you can use to seek excellence and virtue, if that happens to be one of your goals in life, I think that has to be a voluntary goal, obviously. And this is something that I believe is so important to understand, because it's the thing that will guide people toward happiness if happiness happens to be, you know, a goal. But the true nihilists, the dictators, the killers, the starter of wars, the politicians in Washington that do so many things, they're all people you can talk to and communicate with. But do they ever care about what their policies do? Well, my experience shows that they don't have much of a conscience, no matter how blatant it is. And of course, that should be a discussion going on right now about what has happened in these past 2 years with the mandates and the dictates and all the things going on. And if anybody refuses, you know, the process and the dictates and the mandates from the government, you're a very, very bad person, even if you just want to discuss the problem. So I think having a higher authority and understanding it, and understanding the goal ought to be truth, is very important to me personally.
Do you think there's such a thing as a goal-specific first principle? What I mean is, can you have a first principle for liberty, a first principle for how you live with your family, a first principle for how you approach doing your job, or is it higher than that? Is there something even more broad and encompassing than that?
Well, it is, because I think that the total nihilists aren't spiritual people. And I think people seeking the truth, if you come down with a conclusion that the highest authority you can have is the individual dictating to himself what is right and wrong and what is truth. I mean, those are really the two choices that you have. And you can spot the ones that have not a conviction that would be seeking truth. Does that mean that there's going to be a certain group of people who are going to have perfection and not have problems? No. It just means what their higher goal is. And I think most people accept that in a way, to certain degrees. And that to me is vital. And it's been around for a long time. I think from the very earliest recordings in history, there was always this thought of a higher ideal, something much higher than the individual and the selfishness and self-centeredness and that one individual can use force and achieve what he wants. And if there's an overriding principle that can be applied to this for it to function well, is for those who join in the effort and say, well, what should our basic understanding be? Well, no lying, cheating, stealing, or killing. You know, no aggression against each other. And you start with that, and all of a sudden, you know, boy, that's a strict society. That's stricter than most governments. Governments are always lying, cheating, and stealing, and killing, and starting wars. So if individuals would accept this, governments would change. I think Bastiat makes this point. You know, when he talks about, you know, what you and I it's understood that we shouldn't do. So most people on a personal level understand this, because society means that you it's still in most countries, in our country, most people accept the idea you can't murder people, you can't go into your neighbor's house and steal from people, and you can't lie, and there's rules against that. But if we don't do that, everything bad happens. And I think it's just the understanding that you can reach that, and there is a rejection of violence. I think at times one of my most interesting quotes comes from Martin Luther King, when it comes to how do you solve the problems of the races? And his famous statement simply said that we want to avoid judging anybody by the color of their skin and judge them by only their character. So if you have this goal, which most people have, I found out young people in college, on college campuses, are very much interested in this. If you do that, you just have to give up the bigotry that goes on, and you have to say that what you do is you have to say you can't injure other people, and it's a much better society. And you have a lot of people who believe it. They get confused by it. But they're still, to me, one of the major problems we have in our country and around the world is most people don't accept that. They understand it pretty well as individuals. No, we shouldn't murder people. And we shouldn't steal from people, but we can lobby our congressman to go and steal from my neighbor, because my neighbor has 3 cars and I don't have any. I need that, and I have a right to it. They get all messed up on definition of rights, not understanding that when you take something or get somebody else to take something for you, you're violating this very, very basic principle that you can't lie and cheat and steal. And I think most people never heard of that, but the people that do, I know that the young people I talk to on campuses were always pretty excited about that discovery that, oh, I didn't know the government was doing so much. I thought government was always there to do good. Well, a lot of good intentions, but even in our system, and we probably had the best group of men putting a document together, our Constitution, but even from the beginning, we knew of the shortcomings and people resisted it. And early on, you could see changes that didn't reflect this whole notion that you can't violate the liberty of another person. There's always an excuse for it. People need it. People are starving. We have to do that. So we have to steal from you because we have to feed so-and-so over here. And even this past week, it would annoy me because the president said, well, some of this terrible things going on our borders, especially with the last administration, people, we've caused their problem, and that's why they're suffering, and they just want to have a free life. So therefore, we have to give them a lot of money. But he didn't say, I have to steal a lot of money from so-and-so and give it to people that he said they need the money and they deserve it too. You don't deserve rights from and demands from other people. That is not. You deserve to have the right to have a voluntary exchange. And that's why I like the word voluntarism in a system that we're talking about. And that is where two people come together and have an agreement, whether it's a social agreement, religious agreement, sexual agreement, and hopefully that we can transfer that also to governments around the world, that there should be an agreement between two parties. And that goes a long way to solving some of the violence that we have to live with.
It sounds like what you're getting up to, and you mentioned this in your book, Liberty Defined, was the noble lie, which is probably, and it's either a book or a whole other episode, but it's that, you explain it because you wrote it, but I think that leads into the next question. So tell the listeners what the noble lie means.
Well, the noble lie means that the people in charge of the government believe they do have this right to lie for the sake of the people, that they know what is good. And it's most of the time it's a hoax. Sometimes it's well-intended, but it doesn't end up that way because they don't deal with the way what I just described it. Sometimes, the noble lie is you know, biased in certain ways. The noble lie, certainly I had to deal with that, you know, in the early part of this century, when our government and the people were going along with marching into war and all the wars we had in the Middle East. It was just so sickening. And yet they got up and they say, this is the disgusting part. And they still use it to make sure that people don't feel so badly about the waste and the carnage that goes on. What they do is they say, well, and it goes on daily. People, and it's even said to me, I go, oh, you're a veteran. Thank you for your service. Thank you for doing this for our Constitution. Thank you for protecting our liberty. How does what we did in the last 10 years in Afghanistan or the other countries over there protect our Constitution? Going to war without a declaration of war, and we're protecting the Constitution? You know, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. How did it protect our liberties? If by taking up and dragging out people and exposing them, because the deep state and the military industrial complex are the ones who propagate the propaganda that is needed to get the people to accept it. I watch closely from both outside and inside the military in the 60s. I wasn't really into the politics of it. I wasn't out there trying to prevent it, but I did get drafted. I was involved in the mess. But the people said, you know, the Gulf of Tonkin, nobody even cared about that. And yet that was the excuse, because it was our national security was at stake. We can't let that happen, because communism will sweep the world unless we send your kids. And they drafted kids for that. They justified that. So, but they had to lie plenty. I call that part of the noble lie. It's to protect liberty. And they still use it all the time. We have to be over there, because we have to protect our Constitution and all our liberties. You go to war without even any constitutional authority to do it. So it's one point. It doesn't seem like a big point, but it's a really gigantic point that you're not allowed to use aggression like this, and you have to, and you can't lie to people. The government can't lie to you about what's going on. And the big problem, though, is a lot of these people who support it, the people who opposed me in trying to stop the wars, they didn't feel like they weren't doing anything bad. They really believed they were doing something good, because they had been brainwashed over many, many years by our professors in our universities, by the media, by our politicians, that that is doing good. And it was a humanitarian approach, and they have to do it that way. They can't tell you the truth of what is happening, just like they can't tell you the truth about fighting the war against COVID. You know, they have to fudge it, because there are other reasons that this whole nonsense the past 2 years has been going on, and it wasn't just for public health.
If it ever was about public health. So I mentioned the book Liberty Defined, and you have another chapter in there about the morality of government. And we might laugh and say, well, no such thing exists. Certainly, the moral compass of Congress is at least out of sync, maybe even worse than that. You called it a moral vacuum. So I guess this is kind of a two-part question. Can a group of individuals, Congress, have or operate under a first principle? And is there a way for Congress to find its way back to something that resembles what we think was the intent of the founders?
Well, the Constitution, of course, was imperfect. And I think they can, but it's the definition and the understanding of these terms about a first principle, because, you know, most people in this country think the first principle is using force to take care of people who are in trouble. whether they have health problems or, you have to, they don't have any money. So the first principle is, well, we have to do things. That's the American spirit. But what they don't understand, it goes back to they're confused. They've been confused, especially on economic policy, because economics don't follow that. They don't follow Bastiat's simple principle that you can't do what you can't do as an individual. So it's a whole thing that they don't know or don't realize, and they don't want to believe that the people who really pull the strings probably know the truth, but they're nihilists and they just go out there to get power, and they don't care about even seeking truth. But a lot of people, honestly believe it. They have been taught. They don't look at the statistics and what is known about how free markets work. If you care in a humanitarian sense for the people and what's happening, and good, the best medical care you could have, and the most prosperity, and the most is to give them the maximum amount of freedom. And I think that's what our country did in the early years. I think it's faded here in the last 100 years, but in the early years, we were the freest and the best country, but we're slipping. Even with the ration, even how they measure the countries of the world today, we're slipping. But for the most part, people over the years would say that, you libertarians, you're so cold-hearted, you don't care. You don't care about the people. No humanitarian instincts for you. And yet history shows that the freer you are, the better the country is, and the more prosperous is the country, and probably happier country as well.
There's a lot in there, and I would love to have the time to go through it. And I think there's there isn't just one thing to say, oh, look, this is the reason everything went kaflooey. But I do think there is a case to be made that the loss, the surrender, the willful rejection of a kind of a spirituality is really critical to losing this first principle of helping people. This country has a history of doing that, and it stopped doing that because several presidents who will go unnamed have sort of made it the job of busybody governments to take care of the people. So we're getting to the noble lie again. And so we're getting, It seems that the more we have the noble lie, the less morality we have. That seem right?
Well, yes, it doesn't work is the problem. And there's a lot of people who are convinced they're doing the best they can and they're doing the right thing. And then there's a group of people who know exactly what's going on. I mean, do you think the people, how about the corporate giants right now participating in the government mandates, the enforcement of these ridiculous laws against free speech? They know what they're doing, or they're bowing to the pressure of the noble lie, or you better do it or else. Their lie is, if you don't go and do it the way we tell you, we're not going to give you any more contracts. So it's all messed up in that sense. But the truth is not that difficult to figure out, and especially, it gets more difficult when they are confronted with all the biases that they're introduced to throughout their life. I remember saying after I'd gotten out of, during medical school is when I started reading about Austrian economics and other things. And I remember saying there was a discovery about Austrian economics. And I felt like, and I've said this before, is that it took me quite a few years to unlearn, the things that I was taught that were wrong. And it's not probably exactly like the noble lie, but it's misinterpretation, which is made use of the people who want to tell the people whatever they need to hear to keep them quiet. We'll take care of you. And that's the only way it's happening. And the people who believe in liberty, they are just wanting to control you. At the same time, I guess who's controlling us? It's the people who keep preaching that. And it's the people who have the connection. And that's why outfits like the military industrial complex, and now the medical industrial complex. There's so many now that have influence. They have to lie to keep this going. But when they get caught in the lie, the people, are aroused. And that's why I think it's so wonderful when this thing started to break apart. This COVID war is when 100,000 people showed up at a football game without any masks. And they had enough. They were fed up with it. And how about the school, the teachers going to the PTA meeting and getting one or two people standing up. And in a way, they're saying, it's all a lie. It's all a lie. It's not true. You don't have to. They're not helping us. And now it turns out that even Gates is admitting that the vaccines aren't really working the way they thought they should. We need a new approach to our vaccines. But he wasn't totally ignorant, and he was only motivated by humanitarian instinct. No, he was motivated. He was motivated by other things. So I don't know. Maybe we should change the term. Maybe when they participate in that, the noble is the fact that the king gets to make the law. But there's nothing really noble about what they're doing.
That's a fair point. You know, my own personal journey of unlearning all that I had been taught, and taught doesn't even seem to be the right word anymore, but presented, fed. It's hard. It's really hard because you run up against resistance from just the people in your life who were given the same information, who are insistent that what you were taught in school is right and everything else is just wrong. And man, that's a tough resistance to negotiate.
I understand your frustration because I've run into that, but I've also taken advice from a friend who's no longer living, Leonard Reed at the Foundation for Economic Education, because he addresses this. Don't get frustrated. And your job is to understand the message as best you can and offer it, and somebody will use you. I never set out to be in Congress. That was just sort of, I was so upset about the breakdown of Bretton Woods, and it was so stupid what they were doing. I just started talking about it, and it was an unusual year and unusual conditions, and all of a sudden I found myself in Congress, and it lasted a lot longer than I ever dreamed. So, but I tried to follow the rule, become informed, and I was interested in the monetary policy. I tried to understand the Federal Reserve. But his advice also, when you meet these people, and I've met them before, and the temptation is, he says, the approach is never to grab them by the short coat collar or, a shirt, and just say, hey, you're out of it. They can't get you upset. When I meet people like that, I either avoid them if they're totally closed-minded, or I will ask them questions. Questions that if they come up with the right answer, maybe it'll sink in that day or the next day or whenever. When one of the first things that happened to me the first month I was in Congress, I had campaigned on libertarian ideas, even as a Republican. Somebody wrote me a note and was really, really critical of a vote that I had taken. I can't remember the vote, but it was not... it didn't satisfy this conservative supporter. He says, why would you do this? Why would you do this? In that case, it was probably some business subsidy that would help his business. I don't know what it was. But anyway, it was a government intervention that was beneficial to him and it made sense to him. And he wrote me a pretty strong letter. So my approach was to write him back and make it as friendly as possible. I understand your frustration and all this, but this is the reason that I did this. 1, 2, 3. And he became one of my strongest supporters. Nice. Because he wrote back and he said, you've convinced me. But he's the kind of person, if you're not careful, you'd like to say, you don't understand anything about it. You mean to say that the government can print all the money in the world and prices will never go up because the dollar's devalued? I mean, there's time when, talking about baseball might be better than that.
Yeah, it might be. I'm going to kind of ask a question following up on the idea that somebody uses lies as their first principle. Do you think, it sort of seems plain, is deceit a first principle? That sounds absurd, but...
Well, I think that's what when you disobey and don't have a first principle and you're sort of nihilistic and you're a liar, I think deceit is lying. But you're saying in a favorable way, I guess I have to start think of one that I would say, oh yeah, you can be deceitful under these circumstances. But no, I don't think you have to be deceitful as much as sometimes you better be empathetic. You better understand that you care about people. And that is a big thing. If people know you care about it and you understand what they're saying, but you disagree with them, I think it's almost the opposite of deceitful. You know, if you say, well, this isn't, I'll pretend I support this and go along with it, I think that makes things worse. So I think if you're really upfront, you do that in place of being deceitful. So I think honesty is the best choice to have. And that's what sometimes they have trouble understanding because they live with dishonesty. You know, to tell you the truth, the members of Congress, although on a day-to-day basis, it was not in the realm of our conversation now. They knew where I stood and they knew where I was voting and I knew what I was all about. But actually it turned out to be a benefit because I wasn't trying to fool anybody and they didn't bother me. They didn't try to change my mind. The lobbyists stayed away from me and I just voted my way even if I had to vote by myself because they know that I did live in a different world from them. But for that reason, you know, on a personal basis, I thought I did pretty well. But I have to admit, I think the conditions have become much worse now than they were back, when I first went to Congress in the 70s and the 80s. I think there was much more openness and people were willing to discuss the issue. Today, it isn't. But I the more I think about the deceit question is, I think that... unless somebody can present some very, very important reason, I would say just the role is to be honest.
You know, one of the things that you do on your show with both Chris and Daniel, and just in part of your, I think, your makeup, and it's really impressive to me, is you have an ability to find the good in nearly every situation, and I'm in awe of that. It inspires me to look for it because sometimes I feel overwhelmed by the dark. So I'm going to put you on the spot. And in all of this, COVID madness, what hope do you see? Because I'd like to have some.
And I think every day we have one thing that we can say, well, this is positive here. And I think people are just sick and tired of it all. And no, I'm seeing people who are expressing that sentiment. Then you could probably point out something else that happened today and what the president just did and all. But, you know, the fact that the president isn't very popular, I think that's pretty good, you know, because he's getting blamed and he's running the show. So that's it. I'd sort of like to turn that into a little bit of criticism of the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board for stealing wealth by manipulation of money. But I think this whole idea of people showing up at a football park with 100,000 people when they were supposed to be wearing masks, people are waking up. They're sick and tired of it all. But the people who disagree with her are buckling down. They're getting more vicious. And, you know, they're arguing the case that you people are criminals. You're spreading diseases and you don't care about public health. And that's pretty unnerving. But I think when they're over the top, I don't get more worried. I say, you know, I think that helps us as much as it hurts us, because it's finally getting to the point where people just don't believe that stuff anymore. And the number of people who the percentage is probably up to 70% that they don't trust the government. How many people, I ask people about when the government has a commission, say the 9/11 commission or the Kennedy commission to find the truth. Now, hardly anybody believes those things. The Kennedy commission, the study of the Kennedy assassination, you know, at the beginning there, most people said, yeah, it looked like it was Oswald, single killer, that sort of thing. But now it's like 70% don't believe it. So truth wins out in the end. But then that's why I still believe that. And I guess if anything, my time that I invested in visiting a lot of college campuses and meeting with a lot of college kids, it was the most interesting part of my campaigning, and it gave me optimism because they were responding. I think all they wanted was honesty. All they wanted was an honest answer. They weren't there going to agree with me on everything, but they just wanted honesty, and that's why I think they were susceptible to accepting a first principle. What is that principle? That who writes the higher law? How should we follow that? And so I would say that that there's been a lot of good things. I think. I look at things of people I've met over the years, you know, whether it was in grade school and high school and medical school and the military and Congress. Most of the time, on a personal basis, people have been pretty decent, you know. And I walk around right. town here, but I'm still very worried about how to go from the transition where we are to something that we really would enjoy and we'd all benefit. It can be rocky because I'm afraid that, you know, in the meantime, even though we might have the majority of the people on our side, they have the majority of the guns, and that bothers me. And they also have the majority of the policemen, and the policemen that I'm talking about is not our local police. I'm talking about the FBI and the CIA, and that can be pretty harmful. So we have a ways to go, but I'm still on the side that of optimism. That we're smart enough how to work this out. And certainly, you know, in economic sense of productivity in the way we live, our standard of living, it's been fantastic over the last 100 years. At the same time, all that technology has been used more to aggravate war than anything else too. So that's the competition that goes on. But I think there's room to be optimistic, and I'm optimistic when I visit with people like you, Dan, because I know what you're up to, and you'd like to participate in this, and you are. So everybody has that responsibility. As I would leave some of my speeches, the young people would come up, all right, I'm convinced. What do I do? What do I do? Tell me what I should do. Should I run for Congress? And I said, do whatever you want to do. Yeah. Everybody has a role, and the first one is get educated, self-education, and find a good idea so you can answer people. When you finally get somebody engaged, if they ask you a question, how are the poor people going to eat? How are the poor people going to get medical care? And have a decent answer for that is the thing that we have to do one way or the other. And a lot of people have skills that I don't have, and they should use them. If spreading the message of liberty is the goal, there's a lot of way to do it. The first thing is believe in it and understand it.
Well, that's a perfect ending. I thank you for your time, and thank you for your optimism. I look forward to the shows just to find out what the good is you're going to find out of it. So I appreciate it. Thank you very much, and have a good rest of the day.
Good to see you. Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's take a moment out for a word from Jake about his Tasting Anarchy podcast.
Hey everyone, Jake here, host of the Tasting Anarchy podcast. Join my co-host Mason and I each week as we explore the world of wine and alcohol through a Liberty lens. You can find us on all your major podcatchers, tastinganarchy.com or Tasting Anarchy on Twitter. Tasting Anarchy, your wine and liberty podcast. Find out how much government is in your drink.
All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll put a link to Dr. Paul's book, Liberty Defined, on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/166. I'll also put a link to the Ron Paul homeschool curriculum on the show notes page. If you are finding your kids aren't getting from schooling what you want, check out this homeschool curriculum. Develop the free thinker in your kids with the Ron Paul curriculum at culinarylibertarian.com/homeschool. Please share this episode on your social media feeds and give it a rating and a review on your favorite podcatcher. If you like the show, I would appreciate your support at culinarylibertarian.com/support. I've added Bitcoin as a method of support. I also have the Patreon and the PayPal and the Venmo as options. Thanks for listening. I do appreciate your engagement. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon. Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.